Ayanam namaskritya.
Ayanam namaskritya.
Naram cheva
narottamam. Naram cheva narottamam.
Devim sarasvatim vyasam.
Devim sarasvatim vyasam.
Tato jayam udirayat.
Tato jayam udirayat.
Naista prayeshu bhadreshu.
Naista prayeshu bhadreshu.
Nityam bhagavat sevaya.
Nityam bhagavat sevaya.
Bhagavat yuta. Shloke
Bhaktir Bhavati
Naishtike.
Before
reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of God at Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasa Dev, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome within the heart becomes practically destroyed almost to nil, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, whose praise of transcendental hymns comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 28, Text Number 15, translation by Srila Prabhupada. He also wears around his neck a garland of attracted sylvan flowers, with a swarm of bees, intoxicated by its delicious fragrance. And a swarm of bees, intoxicated by its delicious fragrance, hums around the garland. He is further superbly adorned with a pearl necklace, a crown, and pair of armlets, bracelets, and anklets. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. From this description, it appears that the flower garland of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fresh. Actually, in Vaikuntha, or the spiritual sky, there is nothing but freshness. Even the flowers picked from the trees and plants remain fresh, for everything in the spiritual sky retains its originality and does not fade. The fragrance of the flowers picked from the trees and made into garlands does not fade, for both the trees and the flowers are spiritual. When the flower is taken from the trees, when the flower is taken from the tree, it remains the same. It does not lose its aroma. The bees are equally attracted to the flowers, whether they are on the garland or on the trees. The significance of spirituality is that everything is eternal and inexhaustible. Everything taken from everything remains everything. Or has been stated, in the spiritual world, 1 minus 1 equals 1, and 1 plus 1 equals 1. The bees hum around the fresh flowers, and their sweet sound is enjoyed by the Lord. The Lord's bangles, necklace, crown, and anklets are all bedecked with invaluable jewels. Since the jewels and pearls are spiritual, there is no material calculation of their value. Mate dvivri pakalaya paritam banamallaya parajyahara vallaya kiritangaranupuram. He also wears around his neck a garland of attractive sylvan flowers, and a swarm of bees, intoxicated by its delicious fragrance, hums about the garland. He is further superbly adorned with a pearl necklace, a crown, and pair of armlets, bracelets, and anklets. Oma jnana tamarandasya jnana jnana salakaya chakshur nilatam yena tasmai shri gurave nama sri chaitanya manombistam shapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa gitamayam tatati svam patandikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Yoga Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the paraphernalia associated with the Lord. So here, this word is there. Vanamalaya. Vanamalaya with garland of forest flowers, garland of fresh forest flowers. So Krishna is always adorned with a very beautiful garland. We sing also an arti song. Where is that?
Six.
Huh?
Six.
Number six. Vandana Ujjvala. Jaladeshi Vanamala. So Lord Chaitanya also has very beautiful garland hanging down his body. So the freshness of the flower garland is intoxicating. Prabhupada once said, if you could smell the flowers even on the heavenly planets, you would faint. So what to speak of in the spiritual world? The flowers are intoxicating. So intoxication is there in the spiritual world also. You can become intoxicated. Actually, real intoxication is in the spiritual world. So intoxicated by the beauty and attractiveness of the Lord's garland, the bees are swarming around. There are many bees. And the bees, Prabhupada points out, they're equally attracted to the garland on Krishna as they are to the flowers on the trees. Normally bees don't come after garlands. The odd one does, but not swarms, isn't it? You don't find. So once you take flowers off a tree in the material world, immediately they start deteriorating. That's why if you go to a flower shop, the biggest problem is how to preserve the freshness, isn't it? So how to preserve the freshness? That is there in many ways. We see that everything in the material world, when it reaches its peak, then it starts to deteriorate. So there are six different qualities in matter. It comes into existence at a certain time, or what we call born. It grows for some time. Then it stays for some time, produces some byproducts. After it's produced the byproducts, then it starts to dwindle. It's dwindling and gradually it vanishes. So everything in the material world has that tendency. Everything we do, just like we start off in a relationship or a friendship and it's very enthusiastic, there's all sorts of freshness about it, isn't it? Just like if you go, anything you do, you go on holiday in the beginning, it's all fresh and exciting. You start a relationship, it's all fresh and exciting. Person starts a business, it's all fresh and exciting. Or you start some new plan you're going to do, it's all fresh and exciting. And then gradually it becomes more and more boring and boring. Mm-hmm. And gradually it starts to deteriorate, isn't it? Starts to deteriorate. And it becomes actually contemptuous. You build up a certain contempt. Just like if you have a garland, when it's nice and fresh, you think it's wonderful. But after you left it hanging on the hallway stairway or on the on your chair for a couple of weeks, then you want to fling it out the window. You no longer have any more attraction. And it starts to smell also. The body's like that also. The body, after you leave it lying around too much, it starts to smell. So you got to keep it washed and fresh, isn't it? After you've had a wash, you feel fresh. If you leave it around too long, it'll stink. You probably have to throw it away as well. So everything material starts very nice. But due to association of time, this point we were discussing yesterday, that when time is there, then time deteriorates everything. Krishna says, time I am, destroyer of all these worlds. Everything you see, Krishna says, I will destroy it. Krishna is a wonderful destroyer. He's very good at destroying. So in his form of time, everything deteriorates by time. Just like we are also experiencing, our body is starting to deteriorate. The things which could function very nicely gradually become less and less functionable. They become more deteriorated. So here, a very nice indication Prabhupada is making that in the spiritual world, everything is fresh. so fresh. So what is the nature of the spiritual world? It is called Purnam, which means complete. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. That the personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. So that means God is substantial. There is no insubstantial aspect of God. God is completely substantial. And this is very important because everyone is looking for substance, isn't it? We're all after substance. So this search for substance actually really is the search for happiness. Just like the bees, they are searching for the fresh sweetness. They are very attracted to the very intoxicating aroma of the flowers because that is the exciting nature. The bees, they love pollen, they love the perfume. They get intoxicated. They're intoxicated by that. So everyone wants this rasa. Rasa means when there is exchange of mellow feeling, love, when there is this intoxicating feeling. Just like people like to become intoxicated, isn't it? They like to get intoxicated. So sometimes when you have a nice prasad, you feel intoxicated, isn't it? It's like intoxicated because you feel very satisfied. Your senses are very satisfied. So everything in the spiritual world is there to give intoxicating pleasure to Krishna. Intoxicating pleasure, just like Lord Balaram, he likes to become intoxicated with pleasure. So this nature of the spiritual world is that there is substantial pleasure, complete pleasure. Of course, in the material world, we don't have experience of this completeness because here everything is relatively measured according to what we call material conditions. In the material world, our pleasure is very measurable. I may feel happier today than I did yesterday or whatever, but that is not, I'm not intoxicated. I need to, when we talk about complete satisfaction, that doesn't exist. One could never say in his whole life that he was completely satisfied. You could say for some time you were mentally happy or whatever. So the spiritual world is Purnam. It is complete. And what is the meaning of completeness is that it has no limitations. The difference between material energy and spiritual energy is one is unlimited. Why? Because it comes from the unlimited. How can something limited come from the unlimited? You see? Only if the unlimited wishes it to. So Krishna says, I have two natures. I have an unlimited nature and I have a limited nature. The limited nature is this material world where the living entities are struggling. You see? If it wasn't limited, we wouldn't be struggling. Isn't it? Why do we struggle? Because we're very limited. We have limited facilities. Everyone's always moaning about their facilities. Isn't it? The material world, everyone's always grumping. Oh, it's very cold. I don't have a very good house. I don't have a very good flat. I don't have a very good food supply. I don't have a very good. I don't have very good. I don't have very good. Moan, moan. So this is the world of moaners. Isn't it? The material world is full of moaners. People are moaning day and night. Moan, moan, groan, groan, moan. Wherever you go, you pick up a newspaper, it's full of moaners. There's the trade unions moaning because they don't get enough wages. The government are unhappy because they're not able to fill all the hospital beds or whatever. And someone else is moaning because the weather has stopped the trains. And someone else is moaning because they fell down the stairs and cracked their head against the wall. So if you want to understand the material world, you can go to a hospital and see all the moaners there in the hospital. Moans and groans. Everyone is moaning and groaning. Miserable. Isn't it? You go out in the street like yesterday, everyone moaning and groaning. So this moaning and groaning is going on because there is insubstantial, inadequate, incomplete, insufficient. You see, all of these negative concepts, they're existing in the material world because the material world is likened onto a prison house. Just like if you go to prison, you find loads of moan and groaners. If you ever want to hear a bunch of moan and groaners, you go to the prison and take a tape recorder with you, isn't it? So why? Because they are living in conditions which are not favorable. They're not favorable conditions and inauspicious. What we call, what is this auspicious, inauspicious? When something is inauspicious and which is auspicious. So this inauspiciousness of the material world is that this is Krishna's limited energy, and therefore he has created a very wonderful, amazing nature, even the limited nature. You can imagine if the limited nature is so wonderful, how wonderful is the unlimited nature we can't conceive. But we can get some idea from Srimad Bhagavatam. So this unlimited nature is that everything is complete. And here Prabhupada uses the example that 1 minus 1 equals 1. Now that sounds completely nonsense, doesn't it? If you went to your mathematics teacher and said, 1 minus 1, sir, equals 1. And 1 plus 1 equals 1. So what does that tell us? Come on, where's the brains there? What does it tell us? It means there's no measurement. In the spiritual world, things are not measured. Here, everything is measured. And this tendency to measure is done by the senses. Calculus, calculating. What is the meaning of measure? Measurement means to understand the quantitative and qualitative aspects of nature. Scientists are always measuring. How big is this planet? How big is the universe? How many molecules? How many cells? How many atoms are there? How many different types of species? How many different types of psychology? How many different types of fruits are there? Foods are there? How many types of species? So many different. All trying to ascertain. The living entity is trying to ascertain the actual quantitative and qualitative measurement of the material world. They want to understand it. And this is necessary because when we deal with relativity, relative means according to a particular relationship. Just like when we talk about happiness or loss or gain or anything like that, we measure it against something else, isn't it? We have to measure it against something else. We can't, just like Prabhupada used the example of frog in the well, you can't, because we are living in a very restricting energy, therefore, within that restriction, we try to understand greater things. Just like when you try to understand the sky. Now, you say the word sky, but it's not something you can relate to. You can't relate to the sky because you don't know what the sky is. So to try to measure the sky, to try to understand the sky is not possible, or the wind. When something is very great, then one cannot actually understand it. So generally, to understand, for instance, to understand the accommodating potency of God, just like there are billions and billions and billions and trillions of universes. So if we try to understand that, there are as many grains of sand in the beach, there are as many universes. So if you go down and fill your bucket up, we can do an experiment. We can go and fill a bucket up. Or fill up a whole truck of sound and then count each one. So how many would it be, Ravi? Rough idea? Anyway, we can say inconceivable. The easiest thing is just say inconceivable amount. So there are inconceivable amount of universes coming from the body of God. Now, what does that tell us? Yes, that God has such a body that from that body, unlimited energy comes. And not only unlimited energy, but also unlimited variegatedness, because each universe has its own variegatedness. These varieties of life, they're all coming from the body of God. Therefore, God's body must be very beautiful and variegated, because it is the source of everything. So, therefore, here it is explaining about an aspect of God which is very important, because even though, okay, there's billions and trillions of universes coming from the body of God, but you can't fall in love with trillions of universes, can you? Have you ever tried to love a universe, Ravi? It's not easy, is it? Where do you start relating to it? Just like if you get thrown out into space, the astronauts, they're always thinking, oh, there's my Moscow, there's my... Isn't it sometimes you fly over on a plane and you're looking down, oh, there's my mummy, there's mum down there, hello, mum. So that relationship is there, but you can't relate to the sky. You can't live in the sky and have a loving relationship. So this aspect of God is that there are two sides of God. One is that this is his powerful aspect, that God is the source of all power. All manifestations, they are coming from the body of God. But because God is complete, Purnam, even though unlimited units unlimited complete units emanate from him, because God is complete. Therefore, everything that comes from him is also complete in itself. You see, because he's complete. Therefore, in other words, God is perfect, so everything he creates is also perfect. You see? So, even though unlimited perfections come from the body of God, he remains complete balance. That means that there is not one single deterioration in God. So try and understand that now. If trillions upon trillions upon trillions upon trillions upon trillions of universes come out of his body, he doesn't lose one single fraction of his energy. Now, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? That's like you, for instance, producing billions of tons of production from your body and not losing a single fragment. It's inconceivable. So therefore, we think, oh, this is imagination. This must be something. This is something. How can a body do things like that? Because our body can't do it. Therefore, it's very difficult for us to think of God's body. That's why most religions, they don't deal with the body of God. They don't like to deal with it because it's too... difficult to comprehend that some body, look, our body, what do we produce? We can't even discuss what our body produces because it's disgusting, isn't it? Yeah. Huh? Is it, Michael?
Yeah.
It's disgusting. So in public, we can't even talk about what we produce. We have to do it in private, isn't it? All the things that come out of our body, we usually like to hide them because they're disgusting. So this is like the ant trying to understand what is going on in the human plane. You see, just like a little ant. The little ant is very tiny. So the ant is running around, and within his own relative sphere, his body can do certain things. But for the ant to try and understand what the human can do, that's going to be pretty difficult, isn't it? Can you imagine an ant trying to understand how jumbo jets work and how they're made and how they're flown. So this is conditioning. Conditioning means different conditions of ignorance. That's what material life means, simply different conditions of ignorance. So therefore, the lower and lower you go down into the material world, the more ignorant, the more difficult it becomes to understand God. So Krishna consciousness is a purification of the heart, purification of the mind, so as that one can gradually cleanse oneself of the material dirty things within the heart. And then Krishna will reveal himself from within the heart. You see, Krishna can reveal himself from within the heart. And when Krishna reveals himself, then this form, because one of the most unlimited qualities of God, of course, when we say God is unlimited, it's just a word to us. It's meaningless. It's like saying unlimited. What does it mean? Unlimited. Doesn't really mean anything, does it? It just means a lot or more than we can think about. So if you talk about the unlimited qualities of God, one of the most, one of the most unlimited of the unlimited, because God also has variegatedness. So his beauty is the most attractive feature of God. So just like we can understand this, because everything has to be related to the material world for us to understand it. But we can understand it just like there may be a very powerful, very wonderful person, but the beauty is the thing which actually attracts beauty. The beauty of a person is very, very attractive. Just like I may have billions and billions of diamonds and jewels and money, but if I'm extremely ugly, it doesn't mean anything, does it? You won't become attracted to me because I've got billions and billions. You won't be attracted, just like there are many rich men who can't attract any women. They only attract women that are after the money, but they don't attract them because they're not beautiful. So therefore, if God is truly unlimited, then he must also have unlimited beauty. Unlimited attractive nature. And that is the meaning of Krishna. That Krishna attracts the heart and minds of all living entities. So therefore, here, Kapila Muni is explaining the beautiful, attractive form, the delicious form of Krishna. And this form is actually residing in the heart of all living beings. Every single person has Krishna in their heart. Now that becomes also very difficult to understand, because you could say, well, how can God be in the heart of everyone? He's not only in the heart of every living entity, he's in the heart of every animal. That means how many Krishnas in the room right now? Huh? Anyone make it count? There's a lot of them. Because how many atoms in your body? And then how many atoms in all of the structure of the room, in the wood? And Krishna's in the heart of every cell. So therefore we can understand that this is achintya, achintya shakti, inconceivable shakti, that the Lord can actually manifest himself anywhere and everywhere at his will. Not only does he manifest himself, but he manifests his entire entourage, his entire abode is in your heart. Krishna's entire abode, the entire spiritual world, is in your heart. So mathematically, that's pretty difficult to comprehend, isn't it? If you try to measure it, how much area is in your heart chamber? Is that, and to get the entire spiritual world in there? Very difficult. So these things are inconceivable. The example used in the shastras is just like the sun is there, and if you have 1,000,000 buckets, the sun will be in each bucket, isn't it? Each bucket you look in, you'll see a sun. Just like on everyone's head, practically, the sun is shining during the daytime. You can say, I'm standing here, the sun's shining, and in Africa it's shining. So that means something that's very powerful. Krishna manifests himself in the heart because he is there. He's saying himself, Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, that he's there in the heart of everyone. So spiritual life means to connect with Krishna, this connection with Krishna. That's all that life is about. There's no other purpose than life than to connect with Krishna. In the material world, we are trying to connect with so many things. We want to connect with our friends, our wife, our mother, our father, our children. We join clubs, we join different types of association because we want to connect. Now, why do we connect? Because we want to have relationship. Everybody in the material world is after different types of relationship. And according to the quality of reciprocation, the relationship becomes very strong. You can see that. Just like a wife and a husband, generally they have much stronger relationship than they have with the postman, isn't it? Because the quality of reciprocation from the postman and the quality of reciprocation between a man and a woman are much, much stronger. So if we study psychology, we'll find that whatever gives the most deepest relationship, that's the biggest attachment. That's the greatest attachment in the material world. Therefore, generally, between man and woman or between a father and a child, there's very deep attachment, very deep. And the strongest attachment is between a mother and a child. Isn't that right, Amy? The mother becomes very attached to the child and very, very difficult to understand these relationships. But they're very, very deep relationships. So, in the material world, people have very strong attachment because their only experience of pleasure is from matter. You see? This is a problem because our experience is all coming from the mundane. Therefore, our consciousness is sort of concretized. What is it like concrete? It becomes mundane. Everything we relate to is all mundane, mundane. So, therefore, we can see that to understand spiritual experience requires an adjustment. One has to make an adjustment. If you don't make an adjustment, you'll never go beyond the mundane. Spiritual life is not something you just fall into. You have to make the adjustment. It is a conscious adjustment. And therefore, Krishna is explaining in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna the very difficult process, but very necessary process of yoga. So, we'll just quickly go through it because it's very important to understand. So Krishna is explaining that one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So in the material world, our material life is conducted through the mind. That's how we conduct our affairs in the material world, through the mind. So the mind is extremely important when it comes to making this changeover from matter to spirit. If the mind is still conducting in the material world, then you stay in the material world. You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't. As Christ said, you can only serve one master. So if your mind is absorbed in the material, then you remain in the material. If your mind is absorbed in the spiritual, then you go to the spiritual. That's the clear message of the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna says, for him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So mind can be friend or mind can be enemy. Why? Depending on what mind is absorbed in. If your mind is absorbed in the material world, then one has to suffer the association. This can be practically seen in every example. Whatever you associate with, you either suffer or enjoy. If you're living with someone who's driving you mad, then you go mad, isn't it? If you're living with someone who makes you happy, you become happy. This is the way that association works. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. Now here, Krishna is giving a very important, that in order to achieve super soul realization, one must be go beyond the mind. You see? So he says, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Now that seems like a contradiction, because how can happiness and distress be the same? Doesn't it? It sounds foolish if you say that distress and happiness are the same. So that means we're talking about a state which is very, very elevated. Because it's not just something that you're going to suddenly feel that distress is exactly the same as happiness. A person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or mystic when he's fully satisfied by virtue, now this is very important, by virtue of acquired knowledge. So here there's something different. Krishna is saying that you can understand there's no difference between happiness and distress when you are situated in acquired knowledge. You see? So therefore knowledge becomes the important factor. The experiences of the material world are based upon ignorance. The experience of the spiritual world is based upon knowledge. So therefore, what we call knowledge in the material world is not knowledge. It is the interaction between the material senses and the 24 elements or whatever of material world, the different interactions. It has nothing to do with knowledge because matter is ignorance. Now, if matter is ignorance, that means that all matter is ignorance. It's not that just some of it is ignorance. Some of it's not ignorance. Where does Krishna say that? Where does Krishna say that some parts of the material world are ignorant, but some are not? Does he say that? Who can quote such a verse? So that would then mean that every single thing in the material world is conducive to ignorance. So therefore, if one wants knowledge, then it has to be acquired knowledge. That acquired knowledge is called jnana vijnana. Acquired knowledge means realization, realized knowledge. Realizing that, what is the nature of matter? And what is the, the temporary, as Krishna says, matrishpashishta kuntaya shitoshna sukadukata. That one must see all of these things of the material world like the coming and going of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception of sign of Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So then Krishna says, when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization, the words are here, jnana vijnana triptatma. Jnana vijnana triptatma. So not only knowledge, but realization, jnana vijnana triptatma, which means by acquired knowledge and realized knowledge. Then triptatma, what is the meaning of triptatma? That the soul is fully satisfied. The soul becomes fully satisfied. Such a person is situated in transcendence and self-control. He sees everything, whether it's pebble, stone, or gold, as the same. So here, Prabhupada gives a very nice quote from that. Atashi Krishna namadi na baba grahyam indriya seva mukami jivado swayam eva spuratyada. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when he becomes fully spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. That's a quote, Ravi, from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Krishna says, a person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral mediators, the envious friends and enemies, the pious and the sinners, all with the same equal mind. A transcendentalist should engage his body, mind, and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. So now we get into the restrictions practiced by this yoga system. Exact same things are mentioned here by Kapila Muni, practically word for word. He goes on to say, by practice, the yogis who practice such breathing exercises are very soon freed from all mental disturbances, just as gold, when put into fire and fanned with air, becomes free from all impurities. By practice of the process of pranayama, one can eradicate the contamination of his psychological condition. And by concentrating the mind, one can become free from all sinful activities. By restraining the senses, one can free himself from material association. And by meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become free from the three modes of material attachment. So the whole idea of the yoga system is actually to transcend the material, to transcend the material modes of nature, and to come to the platform of what we call Brahma, Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma and Asochitina Kanchati. So here that mechanical process is given because generally people are not able to understand the personal approach to God. Most people have very great difficulty understanding God as a person, and because of that, therefore, most religions and most, yoga systems, they tend to emphasize the physical, mental, mechanical system of elevation. But the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that both the means and the end are one and the same. In the yoga system, the means is to bring you to the platform of realization of God. In the Krishna consciousness system, in the devotional system, the end is already achieved. And Prabhupada actually explains this, that there is absolutely no difference between meditation on the super soul within the heart and worship of the deity within the temple. Absolutely no difference. If you are seeing the deity, even the picture of Krishna, that is actually the same as realizing Krishna within the heart. The only difference is that the means and the end, just like when we say that the in Krishna consciousness, the end is also the same as the means, because one is already situated in the platform of association with Krishna, just like there is no difference whatsoever than dancing with Krishna in the rasa dance and chanting the holy name. Now, when you chant the holy name, are you dancing in the rasa dance? You're not. So there's a problem. So what is the problem? The problem is realization. So the means and the end, there's a gradual purification of the heart. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, this chaitara dhapana marjanam, Mahadavagnavabhanam, that there's the gradual cleansing of the heart. But Krishna consciousness is so powerful that there's no need of any other extraneous endeavor. Why? Because bhakti or devotion is all attractive, and therefore it even attracts the mind of Krishna. The whole process of the yoga system was actually to gain the mercy of God by performing of austerities, just like Dhruva Maharaj performed so many austerities, so many tapasyas. So he actually attracted the attention of God, Krishna, and Vishnu gave him so many benedictions. So this system of holding the neck erect and sitting in a straight line and performing tapasya, these processes are also there, but the most important process of that system is that one should remain celibate. You'll always find, here it's quoted also, kamana manasya vacha. The vow of brahmachari is meant to help one completely abstain from sex indulgence in work, words, and mind at all times, listen to this carefully, at all times, under all circumstances, and in all places. No one can perform correct yoga practice through any sex indulgence. Brahmachari is taught, therefore, from childhood. So this abstinence from sex life is the most, one of the most, or single most important aspect of the yoga system. And we find that also in Krishna consciousness, the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas are all celibate. There is only allowance for sex life regulated within marriage, because generally sex life and spiritual life go very ill together, because the nature of the material world is that when one indulges in any kind of sense gratification, it is very dangerous, because it increases the illusion that I am this body. It's not just sex life, it's many other things also, but the sex life is one considered to be one of the highest material kind of experiences. So therefore, Krishna explains that there are certain restrictions that one has to follow. For instance, there's no possibility of one becoming a yogi if he eats too much, eats too little, sleeps too much, sleeps too little, etc., etc. So all of these following of the regulations, one who is regulated, what is the meaning of the regulation is because that one has to discipline the mind, one has to discipline the senses. You cannot have Krishna without discipline in your sense gratification. This is simply, Prabhupada calls it like the elephant who jumps in the water, has a bath, and then rolls in the mud afterwards. There's no question of making progress. So all of these sense gratifications in the material world, they're like anchors. They keep us firmly anchored to this mundane concept of life. So therefore, all of the yoga systems require that one must remove these anchors. But because Krishna consciousness is so powerful, therefore, the one criteria of Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada says here, Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo vachamsi vaikunta gunanavana karo are mandare majanadeshu shrutim chak chukarya chutya sat kato daye mukunda lingalaya darshane drashu tadbrigya gatra spashe anga sangamam grihanam chatat pada saroj sarobi Shrimati tulasya rasanaya tad apita pado hare shetra padan nusarpane shiro rishikesha pada bivandane kama cha dasya na tu kama kamaya yadho tamashloka janasraya rate. King Ambarish first of all engages mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, then one after another he engages words in describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord, his hands in mopping the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the activities of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, his body in touching the bodies of a devotee, his sense and smell of smell in smelling the scents of the lotus flower offered to the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaf offered at the lotus feet of the Lord, his legs in going to places of pilgrimage and the temple of the Lord, his head in offering obeisances to the Lord, and his desires in executing the mission of the Lord. All these transcendental activities are quite befitting a pure devotee. So this is the science, if you like, of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, all of these things. They are very important that one execute these things very strictly, very regulatedly, and very determinedly, with unrestricted determination, unchecked determination, with great faith. So these things will gradually cleanse or purify the attachment to the material world, and then as gradually, Krishna says, as the devotee surrenders, he reciprocates. So the more one becomes absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the more one can actually experience the sweetness of spiritual life. And there is no difference between hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam and meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no difference between chanting the holy name and directly meditating upon the form of Krishna. There is no difference between cleaning the temple of Krishna, serving Krishna, than directly seeing Krishna. Actually, the mood of the Vaishnava is service and separation of love. So a devotee serves very nicely. Just like Prabhupada says, when a woman has a secret lover, just like she may have one husband, but she has a secret lover. So she is maintaining always this meditation on our secret lover. And actually, Prabhupada said that relationship is very strong. This is parakīya ras. It's kind of a certain sweetness to that relationship, because even though one has her husband, she's always looking after the husband very nicely. But her real business is to go and meet with her lover. And this is going on. So similarly, even though the living entity is in the material world, or the devotee is in the material world, he's always thinking of Krishna, how to serve Krishna, how to execute the mission of Krishna, how to offer nice things to the deity, how to meditate on the deity, how to chant the holy name, how to hear about Krishna's pastimes. And in this way, gradually, Krishna will reveal himself within the heart. As Krishna says, the Dhammi Buddhi, from within the heart, I reveal myself. I show myself to my devotee. When the devotee's eyes become anointed with the salve of love, then one can see. Pramanjari Chari Dabhakti Vilo Charina. And then one can see what? One can see Sham Sundar within the heart. So this eagerness is very important, that one should become very eager to see Krishna. And these descriptions allow us to have some hint or understanding of the beautiful form of Krishna. Krishna has the perfect form, perfect personality, because he is unlimited perfection. There is perfection, but God is unlimited perfection. So our idea of perfection is mundane, but unlimited perfection is totally inconceivable. So the form of God, because we can understand Krishna's form is the source of all other forms, so it must contain everything. God's form contains everything. Therefore, advaitam achutyam manadam anantarupam adyam puranam sham navayovanamcha. His form is advaita. Advaita means non-dual. Non-dual, achutya, inconceivable. Achutya means beyond, infallible or inconceivable or unapproachable. Anadi anantarupam, that God has unlimited forms. Unlimited forms. So, therefore, one can worship these very wonderful forms of Krishna. It's like Krishna is there in the form of Lord Chaitanya, non-different from Krishna. Krishna comes as Varaha, Nrsingadev, Rama, comes as Balaram, so many different forms. Okay, we'll stop there. Any questions at all?
You mentioned about one minus one is equal to one.
Mm.
So you get the example of all the universes coming from the Krishna. It still remains complete. But can you give an example of one plus one?
One plus one, yeah, remaining one.
One plus one.
Well, the because when we talk about absolute, then there is nothing, if you like, to try and understand the absolute plane. There's nothing to be added there or to be taken away. Generally, when we add something to something, it means that there is requirement of addition. But in the spiritual world, there is another type of variegatedness, which is not based upon subtraction or addition. And that is what is called the plane of Krishna's lila, or Krishna's pastimes. So in Krishna's pastimes, these are the variegated pastimes of the Lord. So they're all working according to, they're not actually even working, because when we say work, again, it's a material reference. But they're all going on according to Krishna's desire. So therefore, in the spiritual world, there is no subtraction or addition. There is only Krishna. You understand? Krishna is not subjected to any subtraction or addition. Now, how that works is inconceivable, because just like here is a bookstand, right? Now, add another bookstand to it. That would be two bookstands, wouldn't it? But that's not how the spiritual world is. But how do you explain that? Exactly. You can't explain it in a logical sense, because it's inconceivable. So, just like you can't explain that when 1 minus 1 equals 1, here's one microphone, take it away, and there's still one there.
That means it's 2. Because you take one away, and there's still one there, that means it's 2.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's not conceivable by mathematical calculation. If you have 500 items and you take them away, and there's still 500 items there.
Yeah, but that means it's 500. That means it's
no, because you see, you're trying to relate it with matter. You're trying to relate it with matter, how the material world works. So naturally, you have to use a material reference. Here, Prabhupada is saying very clearly that 1 plus 1 equals 1. 1 minus 1 equals 1. Now, if you want to know how it works, then you have to go to the spiritual world, isn't it? And then see. Anthony.
There's a branch of mathematics, and you mentioned about absurd, it's called absurd numbers, and it's just based on what you're saying, absurdity,
yeah.
Where 1 plus 1 isn't equal to, you know, say 2, whatever. I can't remember all of it because it was years ago, but... You know, with mathematics, sometimes they do deal with really odd concepts. So all I'm saying is there is relevance to it.
Well, in water, they can't explain water, molecular structure of water. They call it the law of confusion. So in the same way, you could say the spiritual world is the law of inconceivability. I mean, if you try to use a material example, then it wouldn't be spiritual, would it? If you say... You know, here's a material example. But one example is when you offer the prasad, it's still there. But Krishna's eaten it. The Prabhupada used that example. Krishna's already eaten the prasad, but still it's there. So, in the material world, when you eat something, you don't leave anything behind. I mean, it's like this, you know, questions that devotees come up with about the spiritual world, you know, like what happens when Krishna eats a grape? You know, does that mean that the grape is gone forever? You know what I mean? It's all kind of like, but that's not really for us to sit here speculating about the spiritual world. We can't even understand the material world. We're speaking of the spiritual world.
So again, if you think of the example of gravity, you know, or if the world, if some people are on top of the world, then why do the people on the bottom not fall off?
Who can answer that? Why don't they fall off?
Gravity.
Gravity.
Centrifugal force.
Some of it's centrifugal force, and some of it is attraction of matter. Matter is attracted to other matter. So you've got so the reason why I don't stick to Tanabe here is because there's gravity. if there was... It's just gravity. I'm stuck on the ground, stuck to the earth. You know, I'd be stuck to the earth. If it was no.
He's not
gravity,
always stuck to the earth.
I'd go straight across because the matter would be attracted. That's negating the earth. But that's what would happen. With material, it's material. It's material. Get the rain. It's still material. And the actual definition of infinity. It's like if you've got a fraction, you say is 1 over 2. So 1 over 2 is 0.5. So if you have 1 over like 200, it's 0.005. And if you have 1 over infinity, which is God, so it's equal to nothing. I'm saying that's not mathematical approximation.
Right.
So that's what this justifies the point. You can't relate the two. So that's a material thing. And you can prove it in one sense, if you do all the... But it's sort of saying, spiritually, it's not... You can't equate the two.
Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the end of mathematics is they come to the platform of Brahman, practically. Because when you actually come to that, dealing with infinity, just like now they're getting into like quantum mechanics and they're getting into all these really highly sophisticated calculations, but they are more and more understanding that there is an unlimited plane. And Sataputta was explaining it in very mathematical sense. But it does actually bring you to that plane of the unlimited, what's called the fourth. He puts it as fourth, fifth to the unlimited. So with mathematics, you can come to the plane of fourth dimension. Of course, in the karmic world, they call that time, but it's not like that. Giri giri. Giri giri hotel.
It said that the super soul, the form of Vishnu as the super soul, is a temporary manifestation or expansion within the material world that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. So you were saying that Krishna's in everyone's heart is the super soul actually Krishna, or is it an expansion of Krishna?
Well, Prabhupada explains that for the devotee, Krishna manifests his personal form as Krishna within the heart of the devotee. He mentions it here, actually, the original person. Yeah. The Lord's facial expression always indicates that he is ready to show favor and benediction to the devotees. For the non-devotee, however, he is silent. So he says that he is the Supreme, because all living, he is especially inclined to those engaged in devotional service. He is always anxious to show favor to his devotees. Just as the devotees are always eager to render service unto the Supreme Personality of God, the Lord is always very eager to bestow benedictions upon his pure devotee. So, but actually Prabhupada, in one of the purports here, explains that for the devotee, Krishna actually manifests himself in his personal form of Shyam Sundar, because that's the adorable object of the devotee. So for the yogis, he manifests as Paramatma. For the devotees, he manifests himself in the form of Shyam Sundar, Krishna. Depending on the state of realization, as Krishna says, I reciprocate according to their approach. If they approach me for Brahman, then I manifest Brahman. If they approach me as the Paramatma, the all-universal cosmic energy, or if they approach me as Krishna, like that.
Will we be able to understand the unlimited in the spiritual world? One minus one, will we be able to understand?
You're really worried about that, aren't you? Just try and understand that your position is 1/10,000 part the tip of a hair. So you can measure that. And that's all you need to understand. Everything else is at Krishna's mercy. If he wants you to know, you'll know. And if he doesn't want you to know, you'll never know. But as a devotee, we're not interested in knowing. We're interested in loving. The difference between a jnani and a devotee is a devotee is only interested in loving Krishna, whereas the jnani wants to know Krishna. So the gopis were not interested in all of these things. They were not jnanis, they were not learned in all that. They didn't know anything about all these different mathematical and philosophical and all these things. They just knew that Krishna is very beautiful and they wanted to embrace Krishna. So therefore, that is the real meaning of devotional service. Krishna wants that you simply want him, not everything else. But we want everything else, but not Krishna. So that's the difference between a devotee and other types of aspiring transcendentalists.
Well, you mentioned the point that chanting Hare Krishna is the same as dancing.
Prabhupada said that. He said that chanting of Hare Krishna is the same as, because you must understand, if Krishna is not different from his name, then that means in his name the whole Vrindavan is there, all the Leelas are there, everything is there. So this chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, one can actually dance in the Rasa Leela of Krishna. Otherwise, why was Lord Chaitanya always in this mood of Radharani? Because obviously he was engaged in the Leela of Radharani and the gopis. So that's a very elevated state, but it does exist. And Rupa Goswami is saying, I wish I had, even if I had millions of tongues, they would not be adequate to taste the nectar of the holy name.
Just on a point that Krishna's name being known different, or the picture of Krishna being known different from deity. So if Krishna is full of all those opulences and these things, then why does a person not get immediate experience of that when they see a picture of this deity?
Because the material energy is there to hide Krishna. Just like Kunti is saying that you're hidden by your curtain of Maya, Yoga, Mahamaya. There's Yoga Maya. So Maya is there to, she's the curtain. Just like you can't see the deity when there's a curtain. No matter how hard you look, you can't see. There's a curtain. So this curtain is Mahamaya. So those who are envious of Krishna, those who are contaminated by material consciousness, then they are covered by the illusionary energy of Krishna. They can't see Krishna. But that is another display of Krishna's power. Just like you're saying, why doesn't someone experience the power of Krishna? But they are. They're experiencing the material power. So if they want to experience the spiritual power, then they have to make proper adjustment. Just like when you have a jar of honey, you may be licking the outside of the jar of honey. That doesn't mean there's no honey in it, isn't it? Still a jar of honey, but you're licking the outside. But there's no taste in the outside. If you want the honey, you have to take the top off and get the nectar inside the honey. So in the material world, we're approaching God, but we're licking the outside of the jar. And there's little bits of honey there, sometimes because shaking around, there's a little drop. So we know that there's some sweetness even licking the jar. I think Andrew wouldn't mind licking a jar, I mean, if he's really hungry. Because there's some hope that you may, if you lick long enough, you might lick a hole in the glass and the honey will come out. But when Krishna wants, then he pours all the honey on your head and enjoy millions of tons of honey. But you can't get it by force or by because you want it, because you should have it.
You mentioned about the mechanical process of yoga, but it seems like a material thing. So how, by material thing, you can get realization?
Well, because the body is a machine. And it functions under certain conditions. So by controlling those conditions within one's ability, one can gradually elevate the consciousness within the body higher and higher. So if you understand that the body, the soul is situated in the body, but the body is foreign, the mind is foreign to the soul. So there's some process of, if you like, escaping the cage. There's two types of cage: the outer cage, the material body, the inner cage, the subtle body. So by mechanical process, pranayama, by drilling the respiration or whatever, they're moving the life force up through the different chakras, and gradually by purification of the consciousness through this system, then one gradually comes to the plane of Brahman, Brahman realization, or Paramatma realization. But one can never get bhakti through that process unless one has the mercy of a pure devotee of Krishna. But it is there because the body is just a, it's like your coat and your shirt. If you want to get out of it, there's a way to get out of it, isn't it? If you want to take it, but you have to know how to, just like a child can't get out of its shirt, isn't it? Your baby Gopal, he can't get out of his clothes because he doesn't know how. But there is a system to get out, but that doesn't mean that you get Krishna. That's another thing. But at least you can get out of the material by gradually coming to the level of Brahman, Brahman realization, or realization of the self. But then there's realization of super self, and then there's realization of Krishna. So there's different levels of realization, but the purificatory processes are given there in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, I think we'll finish up now. Last question.
I was wondering if you go to the Brahman impersonal Brahman.
Sorry?
If you go, someone goes to the impersonal Brahman Jyoti, but he doesn't can't stay there, if it's temporary, then how is it spiritual if it's temporary?
Well, the thing is that the Brahman realization is been situated in the effulgence of God, which is, yes, it's a spiritual effulgence. And I don't know the time period. I've never really understood that. Whether one is there for an extremely long time, infinity or whatever. But generally, because the soul requires to establish his eternal relationship with Krishna, then again he comes down from that plane. So he could stay on unlimitedly there, endlessly in the Brahman, but out of Krishna's mercy, he allows him to again take up the opportunity of coming back to home, back to Godhead. Just like Krishna could allow us to stay in the material world, because ultimately the material world is also created by Krishna, so it must be spiritual, but its purpose is material. And the reason is that so the living entity can actually elevate himself to come back to home, back to Godhead. So similarly with Brahman realization, it's not an eternal position, although it could be. But out of Krishna's mercy, he allows the soul to again take up a process for going on the full journey. And we see in the example, Sukadeva Goswami was situated in Brahman realization, but by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he became a pure devotee. So, it's a question of going further. But he was actually situated in Brahman realization. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jaya, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jaya.